Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. In 1842, Charles Dickens came to America. He was the most popular writer in the world at that time. His U.S. trip transformed him, and in a moment, we'll find out why.
Part of the reason, Dickens' American tour began right here in Massachusetts. He traveled through Boston, Worcester, Springfield, and Lowell. And UMass Lowell is launching a 7-month celebration of Dickens' visit to the historic mill town. WBUR's Andrea Shea, along with Celebration co-curator Diana Archibald, recently traced the footsteps of the great English novelist.
So now walking down the street in Lowell today is obviously very different than it would have been in Dickens' day.
Yes, for one thing, we have pavement we're walking on, and there was quite a bit of mud when he was here. It was a very rainy day, and he talked about the mud being knee-deep in some places.
And it was the center of industry in Massachusetts, right?
Yes, it was a model factory town. We're approaching the Boot Cotton Mills Museum, which is a twin to the actual textile museum that Dickens visited. In American Notes, he writes, "I happened to arrive at the first factory just as the dinner hour was over, and the girls were returning to their work. They were all well-dressed, but not to my thinking above their condition, for I like to see the humbler classes of society careful of their dress and appearance." The thing about the dress is strange but it made a big difference because, you know, he was used to such poverty and destitution, and to see these girls wearing little, you know, ribbons or decorated a little bit shows they had some sense of pride and were not demoralized workers like he had seen back in England.
What was he excited about? Like, why did Dickens come to Lowell?
Dickens had started his career as a reporter, and he had reported on what he called desperate haunts of misery of the Midlands in England. And honestly, for all of the problems that Lowell had in 1842, it was really a worker's paradise compared to the desperate haunts of misery of industrial England.
So his great expectations were met.
Yes, absolutely. It's funny, you know, Dickens is often, people often talk about Dickens as having been disappointed in America. He writes to a friend at one point that this is not the Republic of my imagination. And I think the thing is that Lowell was the Republic of his imagination. Massachusetts was the Republic of his imagination. It was the other America.
That's WBUR's Andrea Shea on a walking tour with UMass Lowell literature professor Diana Archibald. Andrea also visited several other stops that Dickens made in Massachusetts, and you can hear her report later this afternoon on All Things Considered.
But there's that lingering question about why Massachusetts was the Republic of Dickens' imagination. What set 1842 Boston and Lowell apart from the rest of the nation? Well, we're joined now for a moment by Joel Bratton. He's a professor of all things Dickensian at the Worcester Polytechnic Institute and a past president of the Dickens Society. Professor Bratton, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you for having me.
So what's your answer to this question that was raised by Diana Archibald? What made Massachusetts different? Why was it the Republic of Dickens' imagination?
I think there were several things that pleased Dickens about Massachusetts. He landed, his first glimpse of the United States was Boston, and I think it was his favorite place in America. He found the people courteous and good-humored. He found the city to be beautiful. And he was a great admirer of particularly of the public institutions that he found in Boston.
In fact, in American Notes, which he wrote after leaving the United States, I was reading sections of it today in his chapter on Boston. He writes, "I sincerely believe that the public institutions and charities of this capital of Massachusetts are as nearly perfect as the most considerate wisdom, benevolence, and humanity can make them. I never in my life was more affected by the contemplation of happiness under circumstances of privation and bereavement than in my visits to these establishments." He really did think that, I guess, what the great and the good in Boston were doing was remarkably different than he had seen before.
That's right. That's right.
And so where did he visit? Let's start in Boston. Where did he visit in Boston in particular that drew such attention from him?
Well, some of the institutions that he visited the Perkins Institute, and he visited the State Hospital for the Insane, the House of Industry, a couple of establishments for boys, including a correctional institution, and the House of Correction. And he found all of those to be splendidly well-managed.
And there was someone in particular that he visited at the Perkins Institute for the Blind that really stayed with him.
That's right. He met Laura Bridgman, who was the first deaf-blind woman, girl, to be successfully educated.
In fact, she was not only deaf and blind, but she couldn't speak and had a limited sense of smell as well.
That's right. That's right. And she was a tremendous success. Dickens met her personally, was very impressed with her, and wrote about her story at great length in his chapter on Boston. That book then was read by Helen Keller's mother, and that was the reason that Helen Keller got in touch with the Perkins Institute was her reading of American Notes.
Oh, interesting. And Dickens in American Notes writes very emotionally about his visit with Laura Bridgman. And I've got an excerpt here. He says, "Ye who have eyes and see not, and have ears and hear not, ye who are as the hypocrites of sad countenances," very Dickensian language here, "and disfigure your faces that ye may seem unto men to fast, learn healthy cheerfulness and mild contentment from the deaf and dumb and blind, self-elected saints with gloomy brows. This sightless, earless, voiceless child may teach you lessons you would do well to follow." So that was his take from meeting this young woman at the Perkins School for the Blind. But there were still aspects. I mean, this was 1842 America, whether it was Boston or not, that you were telling me before the segment started that didn't make it into the final version of American Notes. There were things that maybe that he saw that he didn't want to talk about necessarily.
Well, we're talking about slavery here, right? And slavery was a very important issue to Dickens, and he placed his chapter on slavery in a very conspicuous and somewhat strange place in the book American Notes. The book American Notes is arranged chronologically, so it starts with Boston. It starts actually with the trip across the Atlantic to America, then Boston, and then he describes the voyage back to England. And after the voyage back to England, he has a separate last chapter before the conclusion about slavery. He felt very deeply about the issue of slavery, and in the chapter about Boston, right in the beginning of that chapter, he begins praising the Boston clergyman, William Ellery Channing, who he praises for his steadfast opposition to that most hideous blot and foul disgrace, slavery. That's strong language, but the manuscript goes on to reveal, I think, the depth of Dickens's passion. He borrows language from the Declaration of Independence. In the manuscript, he characterizes slavery as that hideous blot and foul disgrace which makes the unanimous declaration of the 13 United States of America an unanimous lie, and their solemn assertions that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men deriving their just power from the consent of the governed, a mockery so gross and monstrous, before which common honor and common sense do so sicken and fall down, that even these noble sentiments, with such alloy, inspire but loathing and disgust.
Now, that was supposed to be in the chapter about Boston?
It was in the manuscript. He evidently decided that he didn't want to spend that much time on slavery in the chapter on Boston.
Mm. And then he moved it to later in American Notes.
Yes, well, he moved the discussion later, but that phrase unfortunately doesn't, that passage doesn't make it into the slavery chapter.
Oh, interesting. We've just got a couple minutes to go in our conversation today. Fortunately, there's a seven-month-long celebration going on in Lowell, which I encourage everyone to check out. We'll have a link to that at radioboston.org, link to more information there. But Joel Bratton, tell me, you're based in Worcester, and Dickens went through Worcester on his travels. What did he make of Worcester, and what did the people of the city make of him?
Well, he visited Worcester twice, first in 1842, when he stayed at the home of the governor of Massachusetts, Governor John Davis. We do have some recollections of what he looked like and how he behaved in that visit. And he also spent, in part of that same visit, he was spent part of his 30th birthday. Uh-huh. In Worcester.
He was a young man at the
time,
actually.
He was indeed a young man.
And I understand that in the Lowell exhibition, there is a portrait
of
Dickens at the time and drawn by or painted by...
the Boston artist Alexander, yes.
So it's an image of a 30-year-old Dickens.
That's right, or maybe 29.9.
Very much worth seeing.
Yes,
well,
indeed.
So he went through these various Massachusetts cities and towns. Then he goes to other parts of the country. I mean, he writes very vividly about his experience in the Eastern Penitentiary in Pennsylvania and the use of solitary confinement there, and he was horrified by that. Travels through the South a little bit, and as you were mentioning, just repulsed by slavery, so much so that he leaves the South altogether and comes back to the North and Canada. This gets us back to that initial question about what the America was in his imagination versus what he found in reality. How did that inform his writing when he went back to the UK?
Well, of course, we've spoken a little bit about American Notes, but his next novel, Martin Chuzzlewit, is the only one of his novels that has substantial portions of it set in America. He sends young Martin Chuzzlewit. There are two characters named Martin Chuzzlewit in that novel, but the young one goes to America and relives some of the experiences in heightened fictional form that Dickens had himself. So young Martin comes to America and finds that it is not what he expected it to be either. He falls victim to a scamming real estate operator, buys land that turns out to be a dismal swamp. He thinks it's going to be Eden. Hmm. It's called Eden.
Well, maybe the closest that he found to his version of Eden was here in Massachusetts in 1842.
That's right. That's right. Well said.
Well, Joel Bratton is a professor of all things Dickensian, as I said, at the Worcester Polytechnic Institute and a past president of the Dickens Society. He's also one of the people who's helped put together the fantastic Dickens in Lowell exhibition. It kicks off in Lowell on March 30th. There's more information at our website, radioboston.org. Professor Bratton, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure to be here.
Well, coming up, they've been singing gospel music since 1939. The Blind Boys of Alabama have come to Boston. They'll be joining us in our studio in just a moment. Stay with us. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.